making. Making payments or saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait, welcome to the blockchain.
Welcome to the blockchain. Things are about to change.
Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every week at 5.05 p.m. to 6 p.m. It's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more. Well, what happened this week in that world? Yes, it's been sunshine, flowers, and happiness in cryptocurrency world this week. And here to celebrate it with us, yes, I know the theme music gives it away. Of course, it is Andrew of Mark and Andrew of the Talking Market Show that comes on immediately before us at 4:05 to 5 p.m. And he is here, but we know him as Andy. And we don't even go to the original first pseudonym you had here.
Boy.
Yes. But I can play it if you want.
No, that's okay, Henry. Good afternoon. I like the bass. I love the bass. I mean, that's hip. I mean, that's really hip.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's why I put that in your theme music for your show.
Absolutely.
And now I've branded you, not physically.
Yeah.
But musically, you are branded as well as Mark.
Yep.
You and Mark share the same brand when it comes to music.
We do. You know, and it's funny because, you know, just a month ago, it seemed like the crypto sphere was just, you know, just falling into the abyss. And now you see across social media, champagne wishes and Lambo dreams again. It's like, are you kidding me? I'm up 500%. I'm thinking, yeah, but if it went down 98%, you're up only 10%.
Oh,
so down 90.
Don't be so negative. they just bought in after they sold last June. Anyway, joining in the celebration.
This base is deeper than mine.
Our in-house blockchain developer, expert on all things technical when it comes to this show, that of course would be Stephen Lupka.
Hi, hey, David. Henry. It's good to be back.
Yeah, so it's good to have you back.
Absolutely.
Well, let's see what happened this week. Bitcoin tests its recent 5-month high. And CME Group, Bitcoin futures volumes reach record high. That's after the CBOE gave up on theirs. Google Bitcoin searches surge while Bloomberg News screams overbought. Plus, Commodities Futures Trading Commission Chair Giancarlo, hashtag crypto dad, is leaving on April. It's the end of his term, but we have some departing wisdom from him. In fact, if you went through the rundown, which I know both of you study it deeply before you come in here, if you go through that, it doesn't really, although I put the links if you cared to listen to them, of the audio that I've prepared, we're not going to spend as much time on me summarizing the news as much as we'll let Tom Lee of Fundstrat and Becky Quick of CNBC talk about pricing. And we're going to let it's a little bit longer clip with Commissioner Giancarlo, because he will talk about his decision and the commission's decision to allow Bitcoin futures and what he's seen since they came to the market and what he's seeing now with the price of Bitcoin. And if you ever have listened to Chairman Giancarlo, although he's favorable to blockchain and crypto, you know, he's in that position where he can't really say too much. But now he's, 5 days away from being free and clear.
Yeah, he's just...
And he's a little bit more forthcoming. I'm not saying go out and buy, not even saying don't go out and buy, but just more forthcoming about his personal opinions on what he's seen in the past year. So that's coming up in just
a
little bit.
He's posting a lot of Bitcoin bulls, a lot of bulls on his Twitter. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know about that. And then coming up in about, it's about 30 minutes away right now, we are going to speak with the originators of something called the Tampa Bay Token, which is a social movement based in cryptocurrency that's going to try and make things better for a lot of the needy people here around Tampa Bay, and we'll talk about that. In the meantime, if you want to check it out, you can go to tampabaytoken.io, and you'll find out more about it there. But before we get into some of the news, Stephen, like I said, it's good to have you back.
Absolutely.
Any new projects, anything in the news you're looking at in particular?
Oh, I've been busy. There's a lot going on, but I don't want to take up a bunch of time talking about me. Watching the news, though, you know, it's interesting. It's been very interesting seeing people's reaction to the recent price movements. It got real euphoric real quickly. It's very, you know, I've been hearing, you know, well-known traders and people, you know, calling out, you know, okay, we're going to 50K now. We're going, you know, it's back on. We're going to be at, you know. And it's interesting, you know, I think we're all waiting to see, you know, have we seen the bottom? Is this going?
I'm not waiting. I'm writing a second mortgage on the house I sold a few weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Well, and I'm sure before they catch up with me, I'll have many times over what I need to pay it off.
Maybe in Japan.
Yeah.
Sitting on the beach.
Maybe with Mark Capelli's over there.
That's
from
right.
Mt. Cox. He's, anyway, we're digressing here. Let's get right into it because Stephen gave me enough time to find the liner.
I tell you, I've got news for you.
Well, Bitcoin and Ethereum have continued gaining momentum while most of the top 20 coins by market cap have plunged into the red today, and that is today we're talking about. ONT and Bitcoin Cash are seeing the biggest losses out of the top 20 coins, down about 7 or 6% respectively over the past 24 hours. Bitcoin has continued to climb today with its price reaching as high as 53.15 earlier in the day, as in like 1 a.m. or something.
Were you up, Henry?
Yeah, I was up. I was doing homework, but I was up.
You watching a 15-minute shark?
15 minutes? I got my screen set on 1 minute.
Yeah, 1 minute. Yeah, you sound like Mark's dad, the 30-second chart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even know anybody could use a 30-second chart, but he trades it. But
60-second man, you can call me that. I'll wear it.
Anyway, we'll get you a T-shirt.
No, I don't need a T-shirt. I don't need it. I don't even need to be reminded about it once we step outside this door.
Yeah. So. You yell Bitcoin after 60 seconds.
Okay. But actually, I was looking at the chart when I thought make that move. And well, we can talk about that another time. Let me get through this so we can move on to something a little more substantive than my rambling. Bitcoin has continued to climb today, as I said, hitting 53.15. I think when I looked just a few minutes ago, it was around 52.50. Still a very nice price compared to what we've been used to over the month, Timo.
Oh, we got a caller.
I think that probably is going to be an office call, and we'll let it go. Because if someone really wanted to call us and they were listening right now, they could call 941-745-1490, and we would entertain their call. 941-745-1490.
But there's hope that might be somebody for the show. Or is
you,
more
you are,
likely,
you are baiting me with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. It's like it could be.
It's gone now. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It could have been Dave. They pulled over to listen to the show, and he's calling in.
Yeah. That's Brian.
Brian. Okay.
With his wife.
Yeah, with his wife.
That's been still looking for the show on Saturday. Anyway, the top altcoin today is Ethereum. It's seeing the biggest gains among the top 20 coins by market cap. Also, Ripple, the third top cryptocurrency by market cap, is down 2.3% over the past 24 hours. And total market capitalization amounts to $179 billion, and trading volume is about $63 billion. Although the market cap is accurate, as best we know, the $63 billion we know is continually suspect and probably reflects about $30 billion. We do have a call here.
It's Ripple Army, I'm telling you.
You're live on the air.
Yeah, this is Augie calling in.
Hi, Augie. How you doing?
Hey, we got multiple
callers. Are you calling in with a traffic report?
I'm caught in a massive traffic jam that is caused by two car crashes.
Where is that?
On 53rd Street. And I'm telling you, these idiot cops have really...
I think it's 53rd Avenue, State Road 70.
Going east, yes.
Yes. For those of you actually tuning in for a traffic report.
For the record, we love
over there by IMG.
Our police department here.
What?
For the record, we love our police department here.
All right, let me move on, keep the story going here, and then you...
The Bitcoin thing is moving faster than this traffic.
Sure is.
Well, there you go, Augie. It's the way to see, Augie always brings the rose-colored glasses to the show. Anyway, as we know, the $63 billion is probably totally fake, and the accurate, more accurate trading volume, we could be guessing at anywhere from $200 to $350 million a day. I'm just referring to past shows and past stories. That's not any inside information I have. But still, positive news for the marketplace.
Absolutely.
And some of the other indicators of this, I'm going through just a few positive headlines and maybe one, two negative ones about this. We talked about the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The CME Group has continued to market their Bitcoin futures. Meanwhile, the Chicago Board of Options Exchange is not marketing their futures anymore. And, again, a little bit of a tease when we play the audio from CFTC Chair Giancarlo, we will get a much broader and insightful view of the markets for the futures. Anyway, they have the CME Group reached its highest trading volume since forever. On April 4th, the volume of the Bitcoin futures hit an all-time high of over 22,500 contracts. And I believe these are for 10 Bitcoin.
Yeah, 100,000 Bitcoin, yeah.
I mean, you know,
that's actually more than the market is actually trading.
The futures volume has been really robust on CME. I mean, it really, if you watch it, it has been a really well-implemented instrument. I mean, you know, despite CBOE pulling there, CME has been killing it.
Well, and again, not to over-foreshadow, there's a really interesting observation about this coming up. You just have to stay tuned. Anyway, 22,500 contracts times 10. Stephen will check my math on this. I believe that means 225,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It represents. Which, and if you
do the math again?
22,500 contracts. Each contract is for 10 Bitcoin.
No, it's 5, I thought.
Is it 5 or 10?
I think it's 5 Bitcoin.
Oh, you're now going to have to divide by 2?
Yeah. Yes.
It's quite a few Bitcoin.
So,
it's still a lot of Bitcoin. It's a lot of Bitcoin.
5,000 Bitcoin, yeah. You multiply that times 5,215, and you got money to retire on, Andy.
There you go.
Anyway.
The spreads are still too big on that to trade.
The February 19th, well, you just trading on the wrong market if you're going there, because Kraken, the cryptocurrency exchange, the U.S. cryptocurrency exchange, had bought the futures provider crypto facilities, and their trading volumes are up over 500%. So you just have to go in search of the best spread that you can find, and you can be a futures trader, too. All right.
That's a dangerous market.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a dangerous market.
Well, I think they'll give you 100-to-1 margin or something like that.
I mean, you ever trade 1,000-to-1 margin?
No.
I mean,
I'm not an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, that's just ridiculous. You see these guys trading 100-to-1, 200-to-1. You're like, are you nuts? I mean, you're pretty much, you might as well just go throw it. You might as well go to Vegas.
You put $5 in, and then you're only out $500.
They're mainlining leverage.
Yeah, that's just crazy leverage.
Other news that indicates the trend is that Google, and of course Google knows everything about
Google
everybody,
coin.
Google searches on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency surged nearly 20% in a single hour in coincidence to the 20% surge in Bitcoin price, and is now at its highest trends for this. But the interesting thing about this is where the searches were. The highest amount of searches, let me back this up and say, the U.S., Canada, and United Kingdom did not crack the top 10 of most Bitcoin searches in that period.
They rarely do. Just as a point of interest for our listeners, you know, the biggest search volume has always historically been, you know, just a number of other countries outside.
Now, have you looked at the rundown? All right, well, let's test you. Since you're telling us that you haven't looked at where the big searches are, where are you going to guess?
Zimbabwe?
No.
I'm going to say North Korea. Or South Korea. South Korea.
No. Uh-huh.
Japan?
No, let me just get to it.
All right, I'll get to it. We were just guessing.
Where is St. Helena?
I believe that's an island. It's a Caribbean island.
Is that the one that where all the rich people go to save taxes? Probably.
Bankers are still making the tether there. They're still making sure the tether's there.
We'll have to ask our upcoming guest if he has a home on St. Helena. Anyway, at the Netherlands, South Africa, Nigeria, and Austria.
Oh, wow.
So, I, you know, what...
The
what
Netherlands?
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
But what I think is interesting about South Africa and Nigeria, as far as the African countries, as opposed to Zimbabwe, which is a financial basket case, but has done a lot with cryptocurrency, is you have a new wealthy class in those places who probably are feeling a little insecure about financial security and want another asset class.
As deep as the Bitcoin pullback was, the Zimbabwe dollar, that was... I mean, so yeah, I can imagine they like Dash. I mean, I think that's a big currency over the Dash. Go ahead.
Audrey, you had a comment.
I had a comment.
I thought you did. I thought I heard your voice.
Well, I just
maybe it's one of those other voices in my head.
Dash has been very popular in certain struggling economies.
Yeah.
This is a time to build money quickly, and those are those islands like St. Helens, which I don't know if it's in the Caribbean or not, but nonetheless, you're going to conceal your money in the Caymans and St. Helens and Costa Rica and all those semi-Swiss places that are hiding places for large money. That's where it's going to go.
And how do you know that? How do you know that, Augie?
How do you know that?
You can't say on air.
Oh, okay, you can't say on the air.
Switzerland is the model for everybody else. You don't know that?
Well, Switzerland actually had their
roll
back
their banking
laws. We
had personal experience in hiding wealth, but that was a bad assumption on our part.
Terrible.
Yeah,
but you know, Dash is a popular coin with a lot of the third world emerging economies where they have a lot of currency issues. And I know one of the followers was saying that he was working in England and he would send money in Dash back to Nigeria.
The Dash Foundation has done a very good job of bringing that product to these countries and, you know, kind of making it accessible. And they've really done a very good job.
And also their economy, how they always give. Their eyes, they have that pool of donations and give. So
I want to move us along because I want to get the audio in before our guests come in. Just on the negative side, Bloomberg News found somebody to say that the Bitcoin is overbought, nothing like it since it was at 20,000.
Oh, yeah.
Andy, SeekingCryptos.com co-founder, how overbought is it?
Yeah, it's so undervalued here. It's crazy. I really think it's just not. If you're long-term...
Well, it can be undervalued and overbought, can it?
I mean, it's not overbought. I just think it's... Remember, people don't use Bitcoin. They buy it and they hold it. So they're putting it away. As that float gets removed from the market, you're going to see a lot less float. That's going to push the price higher. Supply and demand takes over. So to say it's overbought, I don't think we've seen the big buying yet. And I think you're going to see that over the next year or two. And I think that's.
Yeah. Also, the question isn't even is it overbought here. It's more just have we seen the bottom. If it's overbought, okay, we pull back for a little bit, then we head higher. Sure. But the real question is not whether it's overbought.
So is the overbought about to happen, and when?
No.
You can't.
All right, we're going to hold that thought and come back with some audio here, both because that last story was from Bloomberg, who has been negative on cryptocurrency, even though they found someone to say that for something negative for them. But the mainstream media has rediscovered Bitcoin, and they have opinions about it. We're going to take a Tom Lee from Fundstrat. You know, when I read the story, it was like a heated discussion. They said it was
with
heated.
Tom Lee?
That which you'll see when they get into the heat, how much heat is generated.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, we'll find all that out in a moment after this break. You're listening to the Henry Rank Show. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bite Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bite Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bite Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bite Federal ATM near you. Go to BiteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's BiteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number,
a real email and real people you've heard live on the Henry Rain Show. If you enjoy the trading and investment ideas you hear on Talking Markets with Mark and Andy, then you're going to want to become a member of their SeekingCryptos.com membership service. And you can join for absolutely free. When you sign up for a free membership at SeekingCryptos.com, you'll start receiving analysis and perspective by email on trade examples, cryptocurrencies, stocks, metals, educational content, and exclusive offers. SeekingCryptos.com has something for you advanced traders, too. Check out the premium membership, the expert swing trades, or the Quant Geeks packages. Seeking Cryptos has skin in the game just like you. They post their trades in real time, and you can follow the results right on their portfolio page. So what are you waiting for? Go to SeekingCryptos.com and sign up for your free membership now.
Alcover Massage has been providing quality massage therapy in Bradenton for over 5 years, and we are proud and excited to announce we've expanded our practice and boutique to a larger facility. Located at the historic downtown Bradenton, we're in a charming craftsman-style building across the street from the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott. Alcover Massage offers many treatment rooms, a spacious lobby, and doorfront parking spaces just for our clients. But what we're most proud of is our highly qualified massage therapists offering great service to our valued clients. Availability and instant booking is found at lauraalcover.com. Alcover Massage. Like us on Facebook, 204 13th Street West, Bradenton, Florida, 34205. Book your appointments now at lauraalcover.com or call us at 941-592-3187. MM number 34081. MA number 50525.
It's all the way up. It's all the way up. It's all the way up.
Henry Rain Show here at WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Monday 5:05 PM to 6 PM immediately after Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew, 4:05 PM to 5 PM, where they cover all markets and we get a little bit more focused on this. Stephen Lubka, blockchain developer in the studio. Andrew from Mark and Andrew and Talking Markets stayed over with us. Guest coming up in just about 10 or 11 minutes here. And we've been teasing about the audio we have from CNBC with Fundstrat advisor or guru Tom Lee, who's been...
I love Tom. Come on. Don't give Tom a hard time.
He was on CNBC all the time and was a favorite Bitcoin cryptocurrency advisor. By the way, Augie is standing by on the line, too, I believe. And we will hear from him, I'm sure, on his thoughts on the audio, too, as we play it. Anyway, he Tom Lee, perennial bull on cryptocurrency.
And there you go.
And that's what Augie thinks of Tom Lee.
Yeah.
So let's just go right into this. Becky Quick is normally the early morning person
that is
in the crew. And we will start with there. It's joint in progress, but Tom Lee is explaining his thoughts on pricing of Bitcoin. Try that again.
If Bitcoin,
you don't think this is a risk-on kind of situation?
Yeah, I think it is risk-on. Plus, the dollar isn't going up, and EM's rallying. And if Bitcoin rallied two standard deviations, it would be close to 19,000. So it's there is a big catch-up move. There is a catch-up.
And you also have an argument about what the fair value of Bitcoin is today, which is actually
okay. This is what you have here. So I said the fair value is 19,000. So the question that follows from the crack CNBC journalist is, how do you come up with this fair value, because we've heard you talk before?
Yeah, that's right. So if you were to take a combination of active addresses and activity per user, that's explained over 90% of Bitcoin since 2013. The fair value for Bitcoin right now is 14,000. So I'm not saying it has to trade at fair value, but
what?
Bitcoin is a network value. Fiat currencies are basically how many people are willing to use it and adopt it. And I think
it's only trading at 30% of its fair value right now.
Yes.
What's the cost right now, though,
to mine a Bitcoin?
Mine a Bitcoin.
And again, the break evens are they've come down that it's around 5 or 6,000.
So why is the 5 or 6,000 not the fair price number?
Because a commodity during a bull period, and Bitcoin's above 208, generally trades 2 to 2.5 times its break even. So that would get you around 14,000 again. But in a bear market, it could trade below its break even.
Buying a ton of this right now? If you actually think it's undervalued by that extent?
Well, you know, we think the best approach for most people is.
It's a little bit mumbly mouth there by old Tom.
He's just that way, though. He's just that way. It's his persona.
Well, that's not new for Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, still, good question for Becky. Are you buying a ton of this right now if it's a 30% of value?
The thing is what he is doing is he's looking at the historical data, and he's creating a mathematical model. So it's a model of best fit. And it's saying this calculation predicts 90% of the movement in Bitcoin's price looking back. But you can look back at anything and create a line of fit that neatly predicts the price. Well, that doesn't mean it'll predict the price going forward. There's a mathematical error.
Let me also quickly point out that Tom Lee also came up with the misery index as an optimistic, bullish indicator for Bitcoin. Go ahead, quickly, Andy.
Things trade under fair market value all the time. Just because why wouldn't you be buying it? Well, I mean, all the time things are stocks. I mean, gold.
Sure.
I mean, for mining, for example, you know, the average price of gold, final cost to smelt is about $600, $700. That's about 2 times. So he's about right. I mean, I understand what he's saying.
An established product like gold versus something relatively.
By the way, Augie made it to the studio. He sounds better
now. I'm surprised he didn't get arrested. But
I wouldn't interrupt you, Andy.
No, I said arrested. I can understand his thinking there. You know, the thing is you're always trying to put a tag to it.
Sure, and I wasn't really the thing that I was really commenting on is just the use of the model there.
A lot of people try to fit data. Yeah, and I agree with you on that.
When I hear a model like Tom Lee comes up with on the Talking Market show, I'll be sure to remind you about that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to hear one, though.
Let's
get to the end of this audio so we can get to Commissioner Giancarlo.
Just to put 1% or 2%.
Are you saying that? I get that if you're somebody who's got a lot of assets. I still think it's crazy. But for a retail investor, somebody who's saving for retirement and putting that aside, that seems crazy.
Well, it's basically the idea that, you know, you can afford to lose 1%. If that's 1% of your portfolio.
That's crazy. You might as well throw it away on high fees to an investor, to an average. Like, this, you're taking a flyer on that. You don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen.
Well, in a way, that's right, Becky, that for the majority of people, it's, you know, 1% is like a small risk bet. But, you know, Bitcoin makes all of its gains in 10 days in a year. I think this is an example that, you know, if you exclude the 10 best days, Bitcoin loses 25% a year. So you got to essentially hold it or hodl it, as they say. To really capture the gains.
You know, here they're beating them up on that, yet they're promoting Lyft that loses money at $72. Yeah. Explain that.
I really disagree. Yeah, with that premise there, you know, her saying taking something that, you know, say has a higher risk is akin to just throwing 1% of your portfolio
right.
away.
Well, Eric Weiss, who is part of Crypto Twitter, if you follow him out there, tweeted to her, Becky, why do you think a 1% allocation to speculative asset with almost no correlation to any other asset class is crazy, especially when it's successful, the return could be 10 to 100%. She responded, are we talking Bitcoin or lottery tickets, which, on the other hand, it's not a 1 in 3 million chance that you're playing. Let's go to Commissioner Giancarlo here. This is courtesy of CoinDesk. They have a podcast where they just interviewed him, and we're going to go right into that. They're going to ask him about how they came to the decision to allow Bitcoin futures to trade.
It's CoinDesk's great honor to have the chairman of the CFTC, Christopher Giancarlo, in with us today for what amounts to an exit interview related to cryptocurrencies. So welcome to CoinDesk Studio One.
It's great to be here.
So we'll jump right in. You were involved in a very historic moment in cryptocurrencies and the rise of this market in 2017. There seemed to be a rush on your part with this historic rise to add the ability to short this instrument. The runaway speculation must have been a concern to your office. Was there a feeling of urgency at the time to make sure that there was a way that this instrument could be bet against?
So it was actually, it was a fascinating time. That whole period in 2017, we certainly were observing the breaking away of the Bitcoin market value from its fundamentals, which I've always believed to be associated with its cost of production.
Just a quick pointing out, compared to Tom Lee's formula, Commissioner Giancarlo is going with the old cost of production as a value for Bitcoin.
I don't think that one's right.
Let him expand.
Since there's a set of fundamentals in the case of this cryptocurrency, it's the cost of production. And you can observe that almost from its inception all the way to the spring of 2017, a correlation. It was trading at a premium.
Just quickly, yes or no, because we'll let you expand later. Is that, you agree with that statement or not? Correlation with cost of production?
Yeah, I mean, of course there's going to be a correlation with the cost of production, but I don't think you can reduce saying its fundamentals are
okay.
Its cost.
Okay, we'll get to that. I'm just asking if it's factually accurate on
I
the
disagree
statement.
With that statement.
You don't think that would matches up
I don't
when you
think
look at the
I
historical
think correlates
price?
The other way. The price correlates to the cost of mining as supply
okay.
and demand.
Okay, all right. We'll follow up on that next week, but let's stick with the...
Yeah. Yeah. To the cost of production, but certainly moving in correlation. And that correlation broke free sometime in, as I say, the spring of 2017, and by the summer of 2017 was a runaway trade away from its fundamental production cost. And at the same time, the CFTC had been approached by two of our key exchanges, the CME and CBOE, about launching a derivative, a future on Bitcoin. The way it works in our marketplace, we're a principles-based regulator, and we work through our self-regulatory organizations, which are our exchanges. Our exchanges come to us, and this is somewhat unique amongst market regulators the world round. We don't approve new products. What we do is we rely on the self-regulatory organization.
I'm going to jump ahead of this exposition just a little bit to keep us on time. Hopefully I don't overjump.
Well, if politicians have to approve a product, they never will, because there's too much political risk in approving a product that people may lose money in. And that's one of the reasons why the designers of our system took it, in a sense, out of the regulator's hands and placed it in the SRO's hands.
It sounds like you had some sensitivities towards the benefits of decentralization from the start.
Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons why the CFTC has been a bit more progressive in this area is because we approach things on a principles basis and on a decentralized basis. So that's a bit of an aside, but so... We observed the rise of Bitcoin's value, and at the same time, we were entertaining two of these self-certifications. Now, because this is a product unlike others we had seen before, we engaged in what we call heightened review. So we did a particularly deeper dive than we do normally.
I'm going to have to jump ahead.
Can I say something real quick on
that?
You know, it kind of blows my mind because he's a commodities guy, that he said what he said about the price is correlated with the cost of mining. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yes. So
cost of production.
To me, that makes absolutely no sense. The price is correlated with demand. No different than oil. If oil was produced, you produce $35, and the value of oil would be at $35.
Well,
so I don't see that correlation.
I only got a minute and a half here, so let me play the part where we come to the day the market.
I'm
going to
have this discussion,
future.
Though, with Stephen.
We'll pull
here.
This next week because we're going
to. Well, Stephen's not going to be
well,
here.
Well, Stephen don't have to come back.
Yeah. I want to hear what Stephen has to say.
Sure enough, the day Bitcoin futures launched on CME was December 19, 2017, and that's the day Bitcoin hit its high water mark of $19,050. And from there, over the next 6 months, you saw Bitcoin come back into correlation, and by the summer of 2018, and since then, Bitcoin has been back in correlation with the cost of production. Now, that correlation is inverse, so it's rather than trading at a premium to the cost of production, it's now trading at a discount, but it's back in correlation. When the cost goes up, the moves are moving back in correlation. So the launch of the future...
And just to add one thing, and then you'll get your chance here, and we'll ask our guests to come in so they can be ready to take on to their segment. He says... It was necessary to create a shorting mechanism for what he says just happened to happen. So, you know, Andy, you go ahead.
I don't think that had nothing to do with the that had nothing to do with the. You can't short Bitcoin. I mean, you could take a short position, but the price of Bitcoin was since it wasn't physically settled, there was no really correlation with the markets. It was
he's rationalizing is what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. It wasn't.
Steven? Your thoughts? If you're here next week, we'll do it in an expansive way.
I think ultimately it's not that I think some mechanism of the futures is what kicked in. I mean, it had gone parabolic, and things that go parabolic come down.
Yeah.
I mean, attribute a, it was, I'm not going to use the word overbought, but it had gone as far up as it could go on that market cycle.
I don't want to shortchange our guest on that. Andy,
thank
you for sticking
Henry,
around.
Henry and Andrew, Steven, Andy, Augie, glad to have you back, Steven. And
absolutely.
Augie, it's glad to see you made it in.
All right. And we will go to our guests. We're undertaking an exciting new project here. It's based here in Manatee County, Tampa Bay. And they come from they aren't your typical cryptocurrency investors or speculators. If I can get them to come ahead and move on to the red mic there, and we'll get them in. There's three here. Let me see if I can manage to introduce them all consistently here. We have Bruce Cam. He is actually a local resident, and I've known Bruce for a while. He's attended some of our Bitcoin meetups. Some of you who are listening may know that. Hello, Bruce.
Hi.
You got to get a little closer to the mic. In fact, you're actually going to have to sort of rotate in to about a 6-inch distance from the mic. And we have a man of many names here because I will have him.
Jacob.
Say again, please.
Jacob.
Jacob Eisenman?
Yeah.
All right. And then saving the best for last, we have Tanya Leah. Yes, and you have a wonderful voice, but you're going to have to get a lot closer to the mic. And you can go ahead and pull that mic up to more of a height that's comfortable for everybody. And they're here to talk about Tampa Bay Token. It's a platform for Tampa Bay crypto professionals to receive compensation for their services while helping the needy, Tampa Bay Children and others. Of course, Bruce is the founder of Tampa Bay Token. Tanya is the Tampa Bay Token news reporter. And I'm running into her location.
You remember that his father was Isaac?
Pardon me?
Jacob in the Bible.
Yes. But in the paragraph that I was sent, it runs right into the tennis line, and I was looking for the segue to you before I came back to tennis. But anyway, let's go with the reporter who is doubling as a reporter, but she's also used to playing doubles, I would assume, in tennis and other things. I'm sorry, it's a weak segue, but I'm working it. Anyway, you're actually a professional tennis player or just a highly rated amateur or what?
I am a professional doubles tennis player. Yes.
All right. See, I was right about from doubling as tennis and with a reporter a week, I know. But tell us a little bit about that. Are you training locally here?
Yes, I train locally.
And how did you get hooked up with this Jacob guy?
that's my dad.
Oh, so so you've known him a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, and so we got you to vouch for him. Now, who would like to tell us what the principle of Tampa Bay Token is? And as they all look at Bruce, I think that means Bruce will explain Tampa Bay Token to us, and that will require him to come over to the microphone.
Okay.
So, Bruce, what is Tampa Bay Token?
Tampa Bay Token is a social cryptocurrency, so that we're developing a localized ecosystem with a cryptocurrency that instead of, it's a total change on the way people are used to cryptocurrency. So instead of people buying the currency and then holding on to it and waiting for it to appreciate or speculate or whatever, we mint 35 million tokens, and 7 million of the 35 million tokens are going to help children, their families, needy people, through directly with the children or directly with charities that work with children.
And then of the remaining tokens, 18 million of those tokens are going to be paid out to the service providers that provide different services to Tampa Bay Token and provide social capital to the children.
So you're not, you didn't say this phase one and phase two. I'm just assigning it, and you'll correct me. But so phase one is to get the 7 million tokens to people that are in need of services.
Correct.
And the second phase is to get the 18 million tokens to people who provide services for those in need?
Yes, kind of okay. All happens at the same time, though. So we're going to mint 35 million tokens, and 7 million will go to the different charities and to the children, and 18 million tokens will go to the service providers.
Now, before Augie asks a question, is there another point you want to add to this or as we unfold this to the audience?
No.
Okay, Augie, go ahead.
What are the chief services you're providing, 4, 5, 6, what number of main service, what is 1, 2, and 3?
Well, the service providers that are getting involved in it are custodians to help manage the tokens and the distribution of the tokens. And because the system is a proof of merit system, although we allocate the tokens to different groups or charities or people, they don't actually get distributed to those people until they actually do something for,
so one,
for the network.
One is distribution and
well, custodians.
Merit.
Custodians.
Custodial and merit.
Custodians,
right?
Who manage the tokens based on proof of merit. Then in addition to that, we have attorneys. We have arbitrators that handle any kind of dispute resolution. Basically, the company itself is a decentralized company, not centralized. So ultimately, all of the different service providers will end up owning equity in the company, in Socionics, which is the company that's launching.
But you haven't stated what the second main effort is.
Well, the main effort is to provide different services or to provide.
What main services are
those? All right, let's give them a chance to answer.
So it sounds like this is funding a number of different charities and organizations that are going to provide, you know, all sorts of services depending on what the charity is.
Right. The charities themselves provide the services.
Some charities that we would recognize that are interested in this?
Well, we spoke with Solve Maternity Homes, and what they do is they provide services to battered women, to children, to women that are pregnant, and they can live in a home in Bradenton or in Sarasota.
Right.
So one of the things that we would be doing is we would be providing them with about 250,000 tokens, which they can use towards the payment or for payment of the different services that they're providing. We're also talking to Realize Bradenton about working with them as far as helping local community charities, things like that. We connected in a partnership with Connect Bradenton, which is a co-work space, and he's accepting tokens for payment. So it's basically creating an ecosystem with a non-sovereign money that could be used for payments and processing and things like that, as well as to support different charities in different ways that are going to be providing the services. We don't provide the services.
So as you launch this, you're in the phase right now of establishing credible service providers or partners in the effort.
Correct. So we spoke to about 50 potential service providers. We've got about 25 of them that agreed to participate, and we're speaking to various charities, food banks, charities related to children, Metropolitan Ministries in Tampa, and it's totally focused locally in the Tampa Bay area.
So I would guess that the easy part, I mean, there's no real easy part to this, but the easy identification part is to find people in need and to find charities that need resources to help them.
Correct.
So how do you get to the point where the charities or the people in need can exchange these tokens for something that will give them assistance or aid?
Okay, so we've been involved in working with large corporations for about 20 years.
We as in you or the whole group?
Me primarily, with different commercial companies. This is really not a commercial company. It's more of a decentralized organization. But that's my background and my experience is working with companies to provide different products or services for tokens or for alternative capital or something like that.
Now, do Jacob and Tanya, in particular Tanya with her presence in professional athletics, is another focus on this is to get well-known people involved with their social standing?
To get well-known people, but Tanya can speak on that. And the purpose is for them to accept tokens for social capital, for them to provide social capital to children.
Would Tanya want to speak to that? Or Bruce is doing a good job. You want him to stick with it? Okay.
Okay, I'll stick with it.
All right. So, Augie, I'm sure you're
I'm just curious. How do you establish merit among the poor? And is it criteria primarily children or families or what?
Well, it's children and their families. So.
And one quick question before you. Now, how long has it been since you launched this? Because, so people understand what stage of the process you're
okay,
in.
It's in very early stages. We've been working on it for about 8 weeks and totally focused
okay.
on it
right.
for about 6 weeks.
Well, if you were to pick a family, what is your criteria when you do that, when you actually do that?
I think the merit is more about the charities, not the people.
Right. It's not the people themselves that have to provide proof of merit. It's the charities that are helping the children and helping the families.
Okay, so then anyone that's poor and in trouble can come to you? Is that what do they do?
No. So different poor people or needy people are typically going to food banks. There's food insecurity. They're going to charities such as Solve Homes, and we're going to be working with these charities, not necessarily directly with a poor person. That would kind of be heavy lifting, but we're looking to establish a relationship with 100 children and with 100 families.
We need to just take a second and let Augie know and the audience know but especially Augie know so that he's got context to this. Stephen and I actually heard Bruce explain his idea. I can't even say it was a totally existing concept. It was the germ of this concept, the birth of this concept, almost the 8 weeks ago. So we were in enough for a conversation at the very early beginnings of this, and now we're hearing the progress.
Right. Okay. So basically this is a concept or a grassroots movement that started in Costa Rica a couple years ago, expanded into Miami with the Miami token, and what we did is we launched the Tampa Bay token so that we can provide similar services, similar ways to alleviate child hunger, food insecurity, things like that in the Tampa Bay area.
Okay. And just so everybody has a sense of the clock here as we get on this, because you can come back and explain this more, but we have about 3.5 minutes to fill this out a little bit.
Okay.
And,
I'm going to ask
Jacob can come in and talk about his thoughts about this.
Uh-huh.
Hey, thanks a lot. Hope we can speak more next time. But, this is based on a constitutional amendment, and it's something that in the U.S. Congress has been spoken a little bit in the last few months regarding Facebook and other big guys there. And the constitutional amendment is the fundamental right of having or not having a virtual personality, and this is the source. And this fundamental right, there are several countries that goes more, that they respect it more than others. So it doesn't go for everywhere. Crypto is everywhere. But there are some kind of countries like Costa Rica or the U.S. where the fundamental rights are more respected. And here it is the basis. So the basis is that people can have an existence as a right, but it's a virtual existence. And this virtual existence can be an address on a blockchain. So you're going to have an address on a blockchain that will provide you several kinds of services, but as a right. So the only way to do it is if it's grassroots and if it's local, and that's why it is a city token. So
you're okay. So your vision, you're expressing something a lot that goes much beyond the charities in Tampa Bay. You see a decentralized vision
of a means to bring these services to people in other locations, not just stuck within a boundary or border.
Yeah, it's a constitutional amendment. It's not a vision. The constitutional amendment was in the year 2004 in the Costa Rican Congress.
Okay. See, there I think we got a little confused then, because we thought you were talking about a U.S. constitutional amendment.
No, no.
So
it was already approved in Germany because rights, human rights are worldwide.
Okay.
So you have a right, even if it's not in the Constitution yet, human rights, there are big believers that you have that right, even if it's not there in the Constitution. So it's something worldwide. It's not something related with a specific country. I was just saying that in the U.S. it's more respected because the U.S. respects more the Constitution, and it's we for the people, by the people, so it's more rooted here.
I'm going to let you continue, but I've been remiss because I haven't said the website enough. TampaBayToken.io. That's TampaBayToken.io, where you can follow the progress.
Right. You can follow the progress on the website at TampaBayToken.io, and we invite everyone to participate, either as a provider or someone that could provide social capital to children and to needy people.
You have a social media presence, too. I believe you have a Facebook page.
We're working on that. Again, everything is very early stages, but the website has taken gone into a lot of depth as to what we're doing and the different possibilities that having a city token can bring to alleviate child hunger, homelessness, and other challenges that people are having.
Okay. We're going to come back to you in a second. I want to remind people that we have Bruce Cam in the studio, Jacob Eisenman, and Tanya Leah, who are the voices you've been hearing. And the website is TampaBayToken.io. And you have about 60 seconds to tell us anything that anybody wants to get in before we say goodbye.
Come on. Come say a word.
Say how you feel about it.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Well, we're going to run out of seconds as you
sentiments. Speak to your sentiments.
Okay, so I am Tanya Lea. I bring to you the latest news and information about the Tampa Bay Token, partnerships that are providing benefits to local children and their families. The Tampa Bay Professional Doubles Team will help convert Tampa Bay Tokens to social capital and to help children and their families.
All right. I think we should have brought her up with that at the beginning. But we want to thank all three of you. We will have you come back as you make news and want to announce it to us.
Appreciate that.
And I want to thank Stephen Lubka for being here today. I want to thank Augie for surviving the traffic on the way.
Amazing.
And Andrew for coming in from earlier. And, again, best of luck on all this. We'll be updated as time goes by. You've been listening to The Henry Raine Show.